Welcome back to episode 123 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here in Chess Journeys, we love to delve into the glories of rating gain, but we recognize the roller coaster ride of chess and the plateaus and perhaps even the pits of despair below that. If you want to support the show, you go to Patreon Chess Journeys. I want to thank our queen level supporters, Scott D4, B6 Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Donovan Rich Burgess, Brandon Halsey, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Rice, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich, Bradley Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Nathan Peterson, and Kristen Glaw. If you want to appear on the show, you can fill out the Google form in the show notes. We all want to hear your story, or just DM me on Twitter. That's a little bit more immediate. If you're interested in getting better at chess, and I know you are, Noel Studer's Next Level Training Program is wonderful for that. You can use the code in the show notes below that will support the show, support your chess journey. Everything's great. And if you love Chess Journeys, which maybe you do, you could leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That would be great. And let's get to our guest today. We have Eric. He is an adult improver trying to juggle very young children, a family, and chess, trying to have it all. Eric, welcome to the show. And have you played any chess yet today?
Thank you for having me, Kevin. Actually, yes, I've been able to play a few games. Didn't go that well. I lost 2 and drew 1 and won 1. So I lost a bit of rating, but it's not too bad.
Okay. That is so fascinating how we as chess players are. There was nothing about like, oh, they were really enjoyable games or the games weren't good. It was like, I lost rating points.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I think there are different people, different types of chess players, and I feel that I fall into the ratings focused person type. Yeah. More. Yeah.
I guess let's start there then. Do you find that focusing so much on ratings is a motivator and helps you? Does it trap you sometimes into like spirals of feeling terrible about yourself? Like, how do ratings and you cooperate with one another?
Yeah, I find for me it's a great motivator. I try to play, you know, casual games with no rating changes, and I find that the pursuit of a rating number is actually a good carrot for me. But also, maybe we'll get into it later, but it's also a bit of a emotional damaging thing also sometimes.
Yeah, I hear you. Ratings are so tough, and I feel the same way. Like if you were like, hey, let's play a bunch of unrated games on your favorite chess server, I'd be like, why don't we just play them rated? Like, I don't understand. Yeah. What even is an unrated game? What's the point?
Exactly. Yeah,
which is kind of funny, because the point would seem to be we're just playing chess and having fun doing the thing we love.
Yeah.
Oh boy. But okay,
maybe this is an online thing actually, because when I started out, I only played online, and it was sort of the only measuring tool I had. So it comes pretty natural.
Yeah, I do play, I guess, sometimes on Saturdays or Sundays at this local coffee shop, and everyone is much better than me, and I don't walk around being like, oh, why aren't these games rated, right? I just have fun crushed. So I don't know. Something about online maybe is the key there. Eric, why don't we start with your backstory? What got you into chess? Did you play it all as a kid? When did you pick it up? What's happening with you?
Yeah, so I learned chess as a child, maybe 8 years old, by my father. But we didn't play that much. It was more like learning how the pieces move. And I estimate that I played around 50 games, not more than 50 games, until I got hit by the pandemic like everyone else. Mm. For me, it was actually not the Queen's Gambit show, but slightly before that. I had a friend in another town, and we used to play chess and maybe talk at the same time on chess.com. Oh. So it was more a way to keep up with a friend than to, yeah. And also, then I got hooked pretty early on, so it was easy to start looking up YouTube videos and such. So
I guess. Was that a thing when you were playing with your friend? Was it just like a friendly thing? Or was your goal like, I need to be better, I need to win?
I was actually a bit better. So but yeah. So it was good in that way, but no, it was more like a friendly thing, and it
Gotcha.
didn't really matter. Yeah.
And then when the Queen's Gambit came out, were you like, oh wow, there's like this whole other world of chess, or did that just have no impact on your journey?
Yeah, actually, I think for me, yeah, I love the show. I loved everything about it, but for me, it was more like reinforcing a bit of how do you say, maybe a stereotype about chess players that you're supposed to be like this super genius, have a natural ability,
Yeah.
and just kind of know how to play. And I find that this is not the case at all. Of course, yeah, maybe if you want to be in the top echelon, you need to have that. But in order to play and to become pretty decent, yeah, you only need to play a lot, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's funny, at my job, people are always stupefied by, how good I am at chess, because a lot of them, sort of picked it up and they're like 600 or something. And they're like, what's the secret? I'm like, you just play a lot. Like anything in
Yeah.
life, if you do it a lot, you will get better at it. Like you said, might not become the world champion, but you're going to reach 900 if you just keep playing.
Yeah. I don't know. Have you been looking at your first games w when you started out online
Yeah.
to try to see to judge your own games? Because I did that and I was kind of stupefied at the mistakes I made, and it was like head in hands sort of moments all the way around. So obviously there is a development happening, so.
Yeah, I need to find. So the problem for me is when I started on chess.com and Lee Chess, I was already, I don't know, 15, 1600 or whatever. But where I really started was on FICS and on ICC. And I don't remember like either my logins or my passwords. And so it's like this period is out there, but I just cannot interact with it. And I'd really like to see those games, because I think you're right. I think I could appreciate my journey more if I could see my early games and the ridiculous things I did.
Yeah, and maybe so. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be quite interesting. Okay, so you start out playing with your friend. You said you found some videos pretty quick. Is that where you went?
Yeah. I mean, I believe everything I do will come as a sort of I don't know, warning to others, but I mainly studied openings in the beginning.
Ah, okay.
And maybe I think it was sort of a crutch, you know. I didn't know, like the feeling of not knowing what to do in the beginning, not realizing that yeah, maybe end games and middle games is the way to go to improve quickly. But yeah, so I did the usual suspects, Gotham Chess, Jon Bartholomew, Chess Network I love as well. So I tried to learn from them, and also obviously playing a lot. I stopped playing only my friend and started playing other people as well,
Ah,
really early
nice.
on.
Okay. What would you say your rating was in this original period where you're like just starting to play lots of people?
I think I was around 1,000 on chess.com, so I knew how a knight fork worked almost.
Nice.
Yeah,
So when you were working on openings so much, were you trying to memorize like as many moves as possible so that you could have more and more games where you had a couple moves memorized and you like had some confidence there?
Nope, I went totally cowardly, and I started out with the London because I
Oh,
knew
okay.
that, oh, I can always put the knight on f3, it's no problem. Bishop f4, it sort
Yeah.
of plays itself before you need, yeah. And it's not that tactical. I was always afraid to play e4 because I knew that it was going to be sort of a lot to keep track on in the beginning. So,
Yeah, I still feel that way about E4.
yeah, me too.
Just so many things your opponent can do.
Yeah.
Okay, so did you switch openings a lot, or did you just dive into the London and get to know that pretty well?
I didn't switch a lot in the beginning. I played Alana with white, Karakhan or Slav with black. So
Okay.
similar structures
Yeah.
every time.
You're playing some like real solid positional chess with no understanding of middle games.
Yeah, basically.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's true.
How did those games go then? Like, did you feel good for like the first 8 moves, and then you're like, wait, what happened? How did it all fall?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
That you start to pick up sort of the middle game plans, or at least you make your own middle game plans. I
Yeah.
can tell you that many of my London games turned out to be me attacking their king and failing. So
Yeah.
not really attacking the queen side. Yeah.
I think that's what's so great about being a beginner and playing the London is you get into some similar structures that you start understanding. You see similar patterns. You're seeing things over and over that you can work on. I think what some trainers would say, of course, is the downside is that by seeing only the same things, you're limited in what you're learning. But I definitely
Yeah.
can understand that draw of being like, I understand where this game is going.
Yeah. And yeah, lately, or yeah, maybe a year ago, I started to switch out some of the openings. And I must say, it's so fun to learn new stuff, and it's really opening my eyes to how complex everything is, not only in terms of the middle game and the end game, but also the different structures you can get, the different games you get, actually.
Yeah, for sure.
Like lately I've been playing the Benko Gambit some,
Oh, wow,
and
nice.
it's and yeah, okay, I'm down a pawn, and usually I don't like that, but the games themselves are so enjoyable, so I actually, yeah, I really enjoy playing that. It's almost like it plays itself, and you get to attack and you get to put a lot of pressure, so yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And that's like, it's one of those temptations I think people have of like very early on being like, I'm a positional player. And had you said that and stuck with that, you might not have ever tried the Banco, which sounds like it's kind of a natural fit for you. Maybe you are a little bit more naturally inclined to being an attacking player.
I don't know. The reason is actually I play some over the board on my local club, and so I faced the same guy for the fourth time. I've lost three, no, the fifth time actually. I lost three times and we drew once.
Okay.
And I knew he was a d4 player, and I knew he was going to play the Catalan. And I was like, yeah, let me spring a surprise on him. And so I found this great video by Andras Toth on the Benko. I'm sure you've seen it. And I was kind of inspired. So I said, let's try it out. And since then, I've used it a bunch at my club.
That's cool. How did it go? Just like winging out a surprise opening against this person. Did you crush them, or were they like, okay, I'll be okay?
He took both pawns, so I gambited, the two
Oh,
pawns.
okay.
And yeah, I think that's theory. But then afterwards, he was totally cramped, and I managed to get both of my knights into his camp. And yeah, I didn't checkmate him, but he lost so much material that he resigned. So I was really happy about that.
Nice job beating a dirty Catalan player. Wow. Well done.
Yeah, I am one myself, actually.
I know, me too. That's why I said that. Yeah, I feel like being on the black side of the Catalan is just so, ugh, right? You just like, neither of you is doing a ton, but the Catalan player has slightly more pressure. And I don't know. I think it's kind of hard to play the black side of that.
But do you find it that you like to play the white side?
Not really.
Yeah.
Of those things where I don't love playing it. I feel like I'm not quite good enough to like playing it because I don't understand all the complexities of what I'm going for. But it's one of those things where I do fine coming out of the opening every single game. And so it's like, if I have all of these holes in my game and I'm not ever losing in the opening, it just feels weird to be like, I should redo my whole opening repertoire for the next 6 months. Like, so because of that, I've just continued to hone this and stick with it, and it seems to be going fine.
Okay, that's good to hear.
I don't know. How about
I'm
yourself?
actually having Yeah, I'm doubting it actually because yeah, maybe I'm too weak of a player to play it. I get great positions mostly. I manage to push my pawns forward, like cramp my opponent, and then I don't know what to do anymore. And I make an ill-advised maybe attack on the king or something. I lose material, and then we're done. So I've actually started to switch it up a bit. So I tried the Larsen, Nimzo Larsen opening two times with great results. So maybe that's more for me. I don't know.
Nice. Yeah, it's funny that you say like you described the cattling exactly how I think of it until you said, and then I went for an attack on the king, and I'm like, wait, what? I never get to attack the king. What are you talking about?
No, you're not supposed to. I think, yeah, maybe there's some lines in the closed Catalan where you get to push your e pawn forward to e5, I think. Then you can attack the king, but otherwise, I don't think it's well, it's solid. How do you say? I don't think it's sound.
Yeah, I feel like it's more of like an attack the queen side with your long bishop diagonal. But I hear exactly what you're saying. I feel the same way a lot with this opening. Like it feels like a 2000 plus opening that I'm just like really faking and just being like, sure, man, I can play this. And then, like you said, I get in tons of positions where I'm like, I'm definitely up slightly, but how do I capitalize on this? I have no idea.
But also maybe it is for me at least it is a bit time control specific. I mean, you don't like to play the Catalan in like the Blitz games. Or at least I don't, because I won't find the nuances. I won't find the only thing that keeps the advantage. So,
Right.
yeah.
Yep. You're looking for some beautiful, subtle move. And in a 3-2 game, you're like, I don't have time for beauty and subtlety. I need to smash.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I still play my Catalan. I lose every single Blitz game at this place with the Catalan. They're always just like, okay, you're really playing the Catalan today. I'm like, yep. Oh, well. Okay. So you spent some time on your openings. You're about 1,000. What's the next step in your journey? How do you branch out of just working on your openings?
Started doing lots of tactics, mainly on leeches.
Okay.
And also, I would say their version of the Puzzle Storm, their version of Puzzle Rush, I think I did them daily, at least once daily.
Okay, that's good.
To get some sort of the pattern memorization down.
And did you find that working on a lot of tactics and puzzle rush-y kind of things, did that have an immediate effect on your rating, or did it just affect like how well you could kind of see the board?
More the latter, I think, or yeah, maybe both. But I think mainly playing and analyzing was the way to propel me forward.
Okay. And were you doing that at the same time as you were doing your openings and your tactics? Okay. And when you say playing and analyzing, let's start with playing. What was your time control you were doing?
Mostly, yeah, I did both rapid 10 plus 0 and blitz. I think it was 5 plus 0 first. Now it's more like 3 plus 0.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's pretty fast. So you got some fast time controls. And like when you play a 3-0 blitz game, how much time do you spend analyzing it?
Not so much.
Okay.
I analyze the rapid games. I would say I always do that, but I don't analyze the blitz games that often. Like, okay, if you run into sort of the England gamut or something like that's you want to memorize sort of the opening or something.
Yeah.
But otherwise, no.
I hear you.
Because they're always like six blunders and you don't need to be told that it's a blunder, you know, because you move too fast.
Yeah, you're like, as soon as you let go of the piece, you're like, there's the blunder.
Oh, he missed it. Oh, great.
Double blunder, cool. That's funny. Yeah, I actually review all my games, even the 3-2 games. Yeah, I don't spend nearly as much time, but I flip through all the moves, and I feel like I can always learn something, but it might be one of those things where it's fake learning, right? So I'm looking at with the engine, and I don't know. There's been a lot of end games I focused on with those games because there's just never enough time in the end game, and it gets to be such a disaster that I love to go back to those end games where I don't have 6 seconds left on the clock to play an entire end game and kind of like figure out what would the plan be.
Would you say that you're stronger in the end game than most of your opponents?
I would say in Blitz I am because my Blitz rating is so low. I'm like 1400 Blitz, but then in Rapid I'm about 1800, and I feel like my end game is about on par, maybe slightly weaker. It's a weird thing where some games I can feel like, wow, I'm way better in the end game than this person, and then other games it's like I'm worse, and it's been a weird thing. I feel like at 1800, like chess.com rapid, some people have spent a lot of time on the end game, some people haven't spent much, and it's a weird mix.
Yeah.
And then over the
Yeah,
board,
because
everyone's good at everything. I don't know. I don't get it.
exactly. Yeah, the reason I'm asking is because you're playing the Catalan, and so I imagine you see a lot of end games in your games.
Yes. So when I switched my repertoire from the Sicilian and E4 stuff, I didn't see as many end games. Now I play the Catalan and the Caro Kann. So when I did that, I also ramped up my end game study a lot. I kind of felt like they went together. If I was going to switch to an opening repertoire that was going to lead to tons of end games, it would be really foolish of me to be like, oh, I don't need to worry about end games.
Yeah,
Yeah, so I think that's
exactly.
a good point. I think the amount of end game prep you need to do probably sort of mirrors in a way what openings you're playing. Have you spent a lot of time with the end game? So you're as a Catalan player, I haven't heard anything yet about end games. I've heard about some tactics, some analysis, playing openings. Where does end games fit in for you?
Yeah, I've done some of it. I would say it's hard to compare with others, but I did some courses. I did on Chessable the 100 end games you must know. I don't know if I retain anything, but in analyzing my over the board games, I think I'm not. It's not a strength of mine, but it's not a weakness either. So yeah, I think I'm decent on end game playing now.
Okay. So you did the
And
whole book of 100 end games you must know?
Unchessable,
Wow. 'Cause I have both the Chessable course and the actual book, and I can't get very far in that book. I'm just like, what are you even talking about? This feels like a waste of time now. You've gone well beyond my capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, it was not fun. I wouldn't recommend it for enjoyment, but yeah, I think I picked up a thing or two from it. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess this is an interesting place to dive into, which is this, like, I'm always trying to figure out like what is going to be the best return on my investment. And
Yeah.
so, like, as I got a little bit deeper, like, the beginning of 100 end games you must know is really like 12 end games you really need to know. And then
Yeah.
after that, it's like 600 other end games that you'll never see. Or I shouldn't say never, but like are less impactful. And so, for me, as I got deeper into that, I was kind of like, this feels way removed from where I'm at. So, I should probably focus on something else. So, I'm curious. What was sort of your mentality? Do you have this? Did you have a thought of like, these are just important end games. If I can know them all, it will be a big return on investment. Did you just want to finish that book? Like, what was your approach to that?
More the latter, I would say. it felt like homework, and I wanted to finish homework. And yeah, maybe to know that I've done some endgame study. But also, when you do a lot of tactics, you get a bit of endgame positions as well. So I think those were actually more helpful, I would say. You have a few pawns each, and yeah, the kings, and yeah.
Yeah, so this is you're saying like just in your regular tactics work on Lee Chess, they pepper in some end games and you found those to be useful.
Yeah, very much so.
Have you tried to do then like you can choose what kind of tactics you want? Have you focused on just like end game tactics on Lee Chess?
Yeah, I
Okay.
did that as well. Yeah.
Oh, nice. And how'd that work out?
Great.
You got a lot of good practice and you felt like it really Did it help your understanding of endgames, or is it more like it helped you clue into just how tactical endgames can be?
Yeah, a bit of both. I would say you sort of get a feel for what the priorities are when you study a lot of tactics, endgame tactics. At least I feel that I do.
Nice.
You kind of know what to do with the king and when to make the pawn push and stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. So you're, in addition to like the theoretical knowledge, you're getting kind of like the gut feeling of how it all sort of works together.
Yeah, at least I feel like that. Maybe not, but yeah.
So when you play end games, are you looking for tactical shots in end games, or are you playing them mostly kind of practically or theoretically?
Mostly practically, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm looking for shots for sure. Yeah.
You're looking for shots, you said? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting part of end games that I think it's, I don't want to say this. It's like, I feel like after reading like Silman's Endgame book and some other end games and like Shereshevsky, I'm kind of like looking for plans and schematics and things like that. And sometimes overlooking like there's a basic tactic here, actually. Like
Oh.
end games are just as tactical as the rest of the game, and you need to really have your eye out for that.
Yeah. Maybe this means that you're on a level beyond mine because I don't really, yeah, I don't plan like that, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's an interesting thing. I feel like the ultimate answer would be to be able to blend all of that together perfectly, but
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
shockingly, I'm not the perfect chess player. All right. So, as you bring tactics into your game, where does your rating move to?
I would say, yeah, on chess.com, I'm slightly above 1860 now.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
not,
Okay.
I don't know the exact number. On League Chess, I'm just above 2000. And that was actually my life goal, to get 2000 on League Chess. So,
Okay. Wow. So you've already achieved your life goal. Are you retiring from chess now, or have you
I,
developed new goals?
shockingly, I'm not. No, you move the goalposts. I think this is how you do it.
Yeah. What's your new Lee Chess goal then?
I want to increase it by 200, but I'm a bit scared to play because I don't want to lose rating.
Oh,
So,
okay. So did you do one of these things where you hit 2000 on Lee Chess and then you just started playing other games on chess.com?
yeah, I mean, a couple of things happened simultaneously. Last year in the end of September, my daughter came, was born. So I was around I think I was 1970 or something on leashes then. So I said that, okay, I will make 2000 this year. If I do that, then I can kind of feel that I don't have to play as much chess anymore because I want to be a good father and stuff like
Yeah, makes
that.
sense.
But as you probably know, you don't get a lot of sleep and you don't get a lot of time to play. So I actually set up a different account on League Chess, which was for playing when I don't know my own name, and I'm sort of caring for my daughter at the same time. So I started playing there rather than playing unrated games. And it turns out I'm about 300 rating points below my normal self when I'm caring for a
Ah,
daughter as
okay.
well. Yeah, I use a different account for that. And lately, when she's sleeping great and we get some time in the evenings, I only play it like after a beer or two. Otherwise, I could use the different account. Yeah. And even more lately, I've been using it to prep for over the board games because I'm friends with almost everyone at my club online, so they can see what I play. So I try out new stuff on this
Oh
account.
yeah. Okay. So yeah, so that account sounds like it's got a lot going on. It's experimental, it's half asleep.
Yeah.
It's things in your system that might make your chess worse. It's got a lot going on.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I've got great news for you. I feel like if your chess.com rapid is like 1850, your Lee chess could probably be about 2200.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to compare them because if you look at percentiles, I think I'm higher on chess.com than I am on Lee Chess. So I don't know. Maybe the player pool is a bit higher or better on Lee Chess, but the ratings are so different. So yeah, maybe.
Because I know for myself, I got over 1800 on chess.com rapid. I've actually dropped down to 1768. I just checked. Oh, how humiliating. But my Lee chess is like 2050 or something.
Okay, then you're higher rated than me there.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's a pretty big difference, which it's kind of a funny thing. I was like, I was at 1800 on chess.com and I was like, oh, that's what I wanted to get. That was my goal. And I was like, you know what? Let's get 2000 on Lee Chess. And I just played like one game and it was like, good news, you're 2000. And I was like, wait, what?
That's nice. But maybe, yeah. So you're focusing more on your chess.com rating.
Yeah, that's what I consider. So I have like a hierarchy of ratings. It's like USCF over the board is like way up there. A big drop down is like chess.com rapid, then Lee Chess rapid. Then a huge drop to chess.com blitz and then Lee Chess blitz.
All right. Okay.
So and kind of like you, I use them differently. Like if I'm in a terrible mood and I know I'm going to lose a bunch of games, I'll probably play my blitz games on Lee Chess and have some fun and do some weird things, and that's fine. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. But maybe, yeah, okay. So maybe the pressure is off on leeches in some way.
Yeah, exactly. Although now there's new pressure because I'm over 2000 rapid, and I'm like, I have to
Yeah.
stay there. I want
Yeah, you
one
want to stay
rating
there.
over 2000.
Yeah, because for me it's the other way around. I don't care that much about my chess.com rating, so maybe that's why I play better there
Yeah,
somehow.
maybe. Because that's a really high chess.com rating compared to Lee Chess. I feel like the gap there is more than 150 points. So
All right.
that's some good stuff. Okay, so let's talk about then, because you jumped in your story, you went from 1000 to 1850. What were the sort of stopping points along the way? Did you hit any major plateaus you had to work through? Has it been kind of like a steady line up the ladder? How did that work? How did your progression work?
I think if you look at my leeches account, you will see that the line is pretty squiggly. But I didn't play that much in chess.com, so it's yeah, I think you will see it's a pretty steady increase.
Ah, okay. That's interesting. Because you're playing most of your training on Lee Chess and you're just
Yeah.
jumping over on chess.com sometimes. And so your
Yeah.
rating's kind of going up.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's really interesting.
And it's, I must say, after I set the goal of reaching 2000, I think this was, yeah, like I said, in the end of September. By the 1st of November, I had dropped my rating down to below 1900. So it was pretty disappointing. However, I felt that I shouldn't be down here, so I played a bunch of games, and actually I hit 2000 on the New Year's Eve of the same year. So actually my girlfriend had bought a bottle of champagne for when I reached 2000.
Oh,
Maybe
that's
she thought that I would stop playing chess afterwards or something like
cool.
that, so we could celebrate together. But yeah, didn't happen like that.
Didn't happen like that. Well, that's exciting. You have it right on New Year's Eve, getting your goal. So you said you had a squiggly line in there. Did you have any sort of lengthy periods of, wondering, am I gonna make this? It looks like you had a period where you dropped from 1995 down to like 1878.
Yeah.
And then like a slow climb from there. Any doubts in that period?
Yeah, for sure. This was the period I was talking about when I lost everything in like 2 days. So yeah, pretty disappointing.
Yeah, that's a big drop. That's a
Because
lot of
when you,
games.
yeah, it's a lot of games. Because when you feel that you're that close, you kind of want to get it over with.
Yeah.
And for sure, your play suffers from it. But
Yeah, I hear
I think,
you.
yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Otherwise, I think around 700s, 1700s was a bit of a slog for me.
Okay, so the 1700s are tough. What did you do then to break through the 1700s?
I'm not sure I did anything different, actually.
Okay.
Just played a lot of games and hoped for the best.
Yeah, so you're just playing games, analyzing your games, working on your tactics, and sort of slowly and steadily improving.
You mean you never know where your ceiling is. I didn't know maybe 1700 was my ceiling. So I assumed that and but tried to improve anyways. So
Okay. So you were thinking, even if this is my ceiling, I'm just going to do the work and what'll happen will happen.
yeah.
Okay.
And
That's
around the time I started playing over the board as well, so I focused a bit more on that.
okay. Because that's such a great attitude. It's so hard to go through a prolonged period where you're just not seeing results, especially with how many results you had seen before that. It can be kind of tough. So, okay, so let's talk about over the board. So, first of all, what got you over the board?
I just thought it was a really exciting thing to go to a club and try to play games with other players. And little did I know that they were going to be so much better than I thought. They were really, really, really good. Yeah, because I've seen some of them play online and their ratings are like maybe 1500 rapid, and then you go and see that their feeder rating is about 1700. It's
What?
yeah. So I was kind of surprised and impressed, and then I realized that they really do play well over the board. It's not just a good number. So maybe it's that they are older people and sort of used to the over the board atmosphere more than the online.
Yeah, I mean, there is that problem, right? Of like, it's easy to take it seriously over the board. You've driven a long distance, you've got an opponent staring you in the face, and it can be easy to get distracted online. You take a phone call in the middle of the game, and then you blunder, and yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and I find that people don't fall apart when they blunder a pawn over the board either. They play the game out, and
Yeah.
obviously there are going to be chances later on, probably. So the games are much tougher, I would say.
Yeah, I had that happen at my last tournament game. I don't know what happened. On like move seven, I just blundered a pawn and I was so upset with myself. But I was like, well, you're here. You drove over here. You're gonna keep working. And then sure enough, later on, I was able to fork his king and a pawn and get that pawn back and kind of struggle back from there.
Yeah, that's the way it goes.
Yeah,
Very nice.
I think it's a good point that online, I would have been more checked out of that game, right? And been like, well, this is dumb. I can't believe I did this. What is going on here? Okay, so when you started playing over the board, did you show up to like a big tournament right away, or did you find a club where people were just hanging out? How'd that work for you?
No, I found a club. They have this weekly tournaments. So every Monday we play. And so I was put into the beginner section because it was at the end of the pandemic, it was opening up. And so we had a bunch of new people playing with no ratings. And it went terribly. It was so awful.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I managed to win a few games against the unrateds, but I lost to all the rated players, ex barring one. I drew one player, and the feeder rating works like you get your first rating when you have a result that is not a loss. So my initial rating was 1255.
Okay.
And at the time, I think I was 1800 on leeches. So I thought, this can't be right. And I've thought so ever since. But I kept up with it, so I haven't stopped playing online because of that.
Okay.
Yeah, and also it's going much better now. So
Yeah. So that first tournament, the first over the board tournament can be really challenging. And do you feel like, did you prep for it well by like doing a bunch of puzzles with a board? Or did you just go in and be like, what? Three-dimensional objects? What is happening?
I think I made all the mistakes you can make, actually. I wasn't prepared for the over the board that it was going to be a difference, and I noticed pretty early that I don't have a board vision at all, like you say. And I didn't prepare for the long time control either. I had played 10 plus 0, 10 plus 0, so my brain was like fried after an hour because I wasn't used to thinking for that long.
Okay. So you did what a lot of people do, which is struggle with their first tournament. But here's the great news, Eric. Now you get to be the underrated guy where like you just show up, you play fine, you gain a bunch of rating points. It should be a fun, like uphill or not uphill, but like just a nice graph.
It is actually exactly like that. This last tournament, it's not over yet. We have two rounds to go, but I've increased my rating by 110 points in this tournament. So that's pretty good. And I have a performance rating around the 1600s. So hopefully I will get up there
That's
in a
awesome.
few tournaments time. But yeah, it's a long climb for sure.
Yeah. And how do you know that you've gained all those points? Do they post them or have you done like the calculation?
They update them monthly, so I know what I made. I think it was 60 something for the last month, and I did the calculation for the few games I played so far this month.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I was wondering. If you had fallen into that rabbit hole of ratings obsession where you even calculate mid-tournament.
Yeah, I do.
And I'm not saying that in a slanderous way because I've done that myself for this tournament. I've been doing so well. I've got a performance rating of like 2100.
Wow.
I'm up 160 rating points right now if I were to just drop out of this tournament. So like
Wow.
things are going pretty well. We'll see
Yeah, sounds
what
like
happens
it.
though. But I got two more games, so the wheels could fall off. Anything's possible.
Yeah. This next round is on Monday, and I'm playing the tournament leader, and he's rated 2180 or something like that.
Wow.
So I
That's
will
incredible.
get humbled pretty soon, I believe.
Yeah, I have a very exciting next round. I'm in second. The tournament leader is Young Forrest. He is the kid who he's a young kid getting much, much better. He's about 1800 now. I beat him the first three times we played, but the last time he beat me, and it's time. It's time for me to take back the crown, Eric. It's time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And if I beat
You
him,
just.
I will be the leader of the tournament.
Yeah, I thought you said the Van Forest first. And I was like, oh,
No, no, no.
you're in trouble.
It's not a Von Forest. Oh, that would
Okay.
travel. That would be big trouble. Okay. So it sounds like you're having a lot of fun playing over the board now. Have you found that over the board has affected your online play? Are you less serious about it, more serious about it? Has it helped you focus your studies more? How has over the board chess affected your online?
Yeah, it hasn't helped it, I would say. Like you say, I don't take it as seriously as I used to because now I have different goals. I do my training a bit different as well. I have a physical board now, and I do a couple of books. At least once a week, I try to sit at the board and try to hash out some tactical puzzles there.
Okay, that's
So
cool. What
that's
book
a bit
are you reading
different.
then?
I'm doing thinking like a grandmaster.
Ooh.
I don't think like a grandmaster, it turns out.
Okay.
And I do one of the Yusupov books.
Oh, okay. What number are you on? The first one or are you on?
I'm not sure, and I don't have it here, so I can't really say, but it's pretty basic, I would say.
Yeah. Are you planning to do that whole 9-book series?
No,
Okay.
I actually got this. I won a group over the board this spring, so I got the chess book, so I use it.
Okay, that's cool. When you're going through Think Like a Grand or Think Like a Super Grandmaster, is it Think Like a Super Grandmaster or
Super
Think?
Grand Essay,
Okay, so the new one. I really enjoyed that book. I loved this was the worst part for me though. I would come up with my solution. I'd be like, okay, I nailed this one. And then it gives you the different levels, and the 1200 would be like, I found it and it's my solution. I'm like, oh no. Now I'm thinking like this 1200, I'm in big trouble. There's no way that's the right answer.
Yeah, but I think you get 2 points for the almost right answer.
Yes, exactly. So I
So
guess
that's good.
my biggest
Yeah.
weakness that I already knew, but I realized from that book is it wants you to give the answer and your evaluation. And even when I would get the right answer, my evaluation would often be way off the mark. And that was really discouraging for me. Have you found anything either positive or negative about your evaluation from that book?
Yeah, that's a good point. I also find that my evaluations are much more, how do you say, decisive than the their evaluations. So it's more like I think their evaluations are often kind of drawish or sort of equal, maybe minus one plus one. Mine is always plus four or minus four or something like that. So
Right. Yeah.
yeah.
I've noticed that like when I talk to my coach and I'll be like, yeah, I went here and I thought I was winning. And he's like, whoa, what do you mean by winning? And I'm like, I don't know, like plus three. And he's like, no. You're definitely leading, but it's more like 0.5. And I'm like,
Oh.
interesting. Like I have this problem of like overestimating my position when it's good. Like I'm right, it's a good position, but you know, like it's a cattle in position and you're not, you don't have plus three in a cattle and all that often.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, is it a bad thing to misevaluate? Yeah, maybe it is. I'm not sure.
Probably
Because
it is.
it's good to be confident as well
I
to
like that. Yeah.
defeat. Yeah.
You're like, I've got you. I'm crushing you. And they're like, what are you
Yeah.
talking about? You have a very slight advantage.
Yeah. My last game at the club, I drew a player, and when we did the analysis, he thought that he was winning the whole game. And it turns out that he had 0.5 plus for 2 moves, but otherwise he was losing. So it's
Wow.
interesting.
Yeah, that's a pretty dramatic misevaluation.
Yeah.
And then those
But
misevaluations can be really tough because then, like, you should be fighting maybe for a draw, but you're overpressing because you think you're winning. And then that's when things can really go awry.
Yeah. In this case, it worked out for him because I didn't find the winning sequence, so I just perpetually checked him until it was a draw.
Okay, so you did
So
have a winning
I
sequence.
did have a winning sequence. Yeah, I think the Stockfish says plus six or something.
That sounds pretty winning.
So, yeah.
Okay.
But you get those, yeah.
Yeah. Have you brought coaching at all into your journey?
I have, yeah. I tried out some different coaches, but now I have the same guy for like half a year at least, I would say. It's a Swedish feeder master called Dennis. Shout out Dennis Armand.
Okay.
He's called Feda Master on leashes if anyone wants a good coach.
Wait, his name on Lee Chess is just Fide Master?
Yeah, but he spells it FEDA
Oh,
Master.
okay. I was gonna say that's pretty impressive if you could get the name Fide Master.
Yeah,
Wow.
FM Feeder Master. It's nice. No, but we've been working together for a few weeks or half a year almost. So I think it's very beneficial to have someone like that. He's pretty opening heavy as well. So
Oh, okay.
he gives me a lot of interesting variations to consider before a game. And we actually prep for my opponents. So he usually goes over the games and comes back with a plan.
Oh, wow. So you've got a second in your corner.
Yeah, I have a second, but yeah, he wants me to play the Catalan, and I like to mix it up a bit more, so I don't always use it, but yeah, it's very beneficial to see how he thinks about the positions as well. He's
Yeah. Do you guys go over games and analyze, and he tells you what he thinks?
yeah, for sure.
Okay.
And you also, we do that, and he's really good at like I said, going over openings and try to find what I'm not seeing in the position in terms of plans. So, and I think that's a main weakness of mine to find the middle game plans from the openings. So,
Okay.
it has been good. He also we go over my online games as well, and actually I need to before I have the permission to play an opening. I need to kind of show him that I know what I'm doing.
Ah, okay. So like you're allowed to play it online badly, but before you get to play it over the board, you have to prove to him you can do it.
Yeah, something like
Okay.
that.
That's a cool idea.
Yeah.
And so is this what that second Lee Chess account is for? Is for losing a lot of games on the way to mastery?
Exactly. Yes,
Okay.
that's how it used.
There
Yeah.
we go. That seems like a good plan. So it sounds like while you're working a lot of openings with him, that he's really focused on middle game plans coming out of your openings. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems really important. So it's not a situation where you memorize a bunch of moves and then you look at the board and go, okay, cool. I have no idea what to do now.
No, exactly.
Yeah, that can be tough.
Yeah.
What's your study plan look like these days? Like, how much time do you have a week or a day to spend on chess?
Formally, it's not a lot actually. I have a few hours from the weekdays, but you know how it is when you're a father and you have responsibilities. So, I try to get some games in when I can. I try to, like I said, sit at the board for one evening. And otherwise, I would say I consume a lot of material like videos before bedtime and stuff like that. But the study plan is not really formalized in any way, and probably not very efficient either at the moment.
So you don't have like a formal study plan you're following. It's more just kind of like whatever you feel like doing or watching in that particular day is what you do.
Yeah,
Okay.
or feel like I need to do,
Oh, yeah.
like before a game, maybe I fire up Chessable to learn an opening, or like prepping for an opponent. But it otherwise it's more mostly playing games and analyzing when I can.
Okay. So when you have, sounds like when you have a lot of time, you're playing games and analyzing them or setting something up on the board. And then when you have minimal time, you're doing things like Chessable, or if you're in bed, you're watching a video before you go to bed.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It sounds
And
like
also,
the adult improver way.
or maybe adult enjoyer way, maybe more. I
Yeah, well, I
don't
mean, you've had a lot of improvement, man. Your graph is a beautiful sight to behold
know.
of just constant small improvement. So I would trade my graph for yours any day of the week.
I think so.
So it's been great. So let's wrap up today then with what are your goals? So you reached your lifetime goal of 2000 Lee Chess Rapid and didn't quit chess. So, where are we at now? Is your goal shifted mostly to like FIDE goals? What are we looking at?
Yeah, I have a FIDE goal of 1700.
Okay.
Obviously, I have some climbing to do. Also, like I said, 2200 rapid would be nice to get. But yeah, I don't know where my ceiling is. I don't know if I have that much time to study anymore. So I have a second kid on the way in February. So probably Chess will have be in the back seat for some time as well. But
Yeah.
yeah, we'll see.
You're entering that interesting phase of life where you have a 1-year-old you're about to have another child. So for like the next 5 years, life is going to be very exhausting, overwhelming, chaotic, wonderful, fun, but hard to squeeze chess in there. I hear you.
But your child plays chess, correct? Your daughter, right?
Yes, my daughter plays. She's 8, and that's been a lot of fun. Sort of, she pl her journey is so hilarious because she's just so much a kid. Where it's like, I don't study, I don't even play that much. I just show up over the board and win games, and I'm like, what? How does one do this? I want this. How do you do that?
When did you teach her?
I taught her how to move the pieces when she was 2 or 3. And then I taught her how to play at about 5. She didn't love it yet. And then just over the next couple of years, she picked up that more. Like when she was 6, she started really getting into it. And then when she was 7 is when she really started playing tournaments.
All right. That's interesting. I would lo love to have my daughter with me playing chess.
Yeah, it's really fun, and I have to understand the limitations of how my daughter approaches chess. So like I can't take her to big tournaments where we have, long games. She's more of like a rapid player. So she plays like game 25, and that's her time control. So when we can play a place where I can have a slightly longer game and maybe she gets 2 of those game 25s, it works great. But she's not ready to like fly to Vegas and sit in the ballroom while I play for 5 hours and her game ends in, 30 minutes. So we're not there yet. I don't know if we will be, to be honest. And that's just, it's part of the thing of accepting the realities of someone else's journey.
Yeah, for sure.
So we'll see where hers is at. So who knows? Maybe your children will become chess players and maybe even pass you, Eric. Who knows?
Yeah, that would be something.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Well, good luck on being a new parent again. Whew. It's gonna be a lot, man. I can't imagine having like 2 kids in diapers at the same time. That's a lot.
That is a lot. Well, thank you very much, Kevin. It was a pleasure. And thank you for this podcast. It's a great listen. I've listened to all of the episodes now, almost. And it's a great companion when you go on the long stroller walks, I must say. So thanks for that.
Okay, you're welcome. What great praise. Good stroller walk accompaniment. I appreciate it. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Eric. I hope you achieve all your goals and beyond. And for those of you out there, hopefully this is the week where you continue making all your progress like Eric. But if it's not, and you drop 150 points, it happens. It happens. And come back next week. We'll have another guest who will help you figure out how to get your points back or just enjoy chess and not care about rating. Wouldn't that be great? All right. I'll see you next time, everyone. Goodbye.